Is it her voice or her voice? That's the title of a new recording featuring the Neve Trio, which is violinist Anna Williams, pianist Eri Nakamura, and cellist Mikhail Veselov. They've just put out a new recording, and they're celebrating three trailblazing composers who happen to be women. It's Her Voice, and It's Her Voice. The title of their new recording featured this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. I'm talking with the members of the Neve Trio, which are violinist Anna Williams, cellist Mikhail Veselov, and pianist Eri Nakamura. Thank you for joining me.
Our pleasure.
Thank you
for having us.
I'd like to start off by having each of you introduce yourselves. Who are you, and then how did this trio come to be?
We kind of have like a collective brain, so because we spend so much time together, we never talk about ourselves separately, really. But so I'm Mikhail Veselov. I'm originally from St. Petersburg, Russia. I play cello in the Neve Trio. I also teach, as my colleagues as well, at Laundry School of Music of Bard College. I teach cello, chamber music, and some classes as well. I came to the States for grad school at Laundry. That's where I met Anna initially a little more than 10 years ago. That's kind of a short story of my life, I guess.
Okay, great. How about you, Eri?
I'm Eri Nakamura, the pianist. I'm born in Japan. I came to the States more than 20 years ago to go to high school in Michigan, Interlochen Arts Academy. And I always loved chamber music. And when I met Anna and Misha in a festival that we were teaching in Lenox, it was like a dream come true to join the trio, because it had been my dream, you know, to record and tour all over the world, and that's come true.
That was so nice.
And Anna?
I don't know how to follow that. That was so nice. Anna Williams, I'm the violinist. I'm originally from Massachusetts, so it's always, you know, Misha's from Russia, Eri's from Japan, and I'm from Massachusetts, so it's local yokel, I guess, when we're in the States. Misha and I met in grad school at the Laundry School of Music, and it's one of those, life is mysterious and wonderful, and we now have come full circle and are teaching there and in residence there as an ensemble. And then we give performances when we're out in the world. We also sort of represent Laundry to a degree, sort of getting the word out about this wonderful school that means a lot to us.
So how did each of you fall in love with the medium of the piano trio as opposed to something else? You know, oftentimes musicians head off to music school and their goal is to end up in an orchestra or something. How did you decide that the piano trio was the right setting for each of you?
Well, I would say, so Misha and I met, as was mentioned, at the Laundry School of Music, and we started playing together really from day one. I instantly felt such a connection to Misha and his playing. From a young age, I had a teacher who was in a piano trio, and I always really was inspired by her playing. And I just remember going to those concerts as a little kid and just being swept away by sort of the stories that could be told without words. I was always kind of a theater kid, too. I loved musicals and plays and being part of them. And what I was so taken with from a young age was the colors and the stories and how it was so impactful in a way, more meaningful than words, because it wasn't defined by words. And the piano trio in particular obviously has an enormous amount of repertoire that's just incredible. It's just an embarrassment of riches. So to get to dive into that is just really, it's really a treat and a real privilege.
Would one of you, or maybe more of you, could you please explain the name of the trio? Where did the name Neve Trio come from? And I know it actually is connected to a friend of yours, a late friend. His name is Bruce. He inspired you in many ways. Who would like to share that story?
That story is really meaningful to us. It really sort of anchors us in what we do and why we do it. We had a very meaningful experience early on when we were first playing together. We would play concerts in this particular community in New Jersey and got to know many members of the community, in particular this fellow named Bruce. He just loved music. It meant so much to him, and he would come to our concerts and tell us so, you know, share his deep emotions and just how much it meant to him. Then he unfortunately suffered an accident and became paralyzed, and so we started going to him. And I don't think there's any way he could have even known, but those times that we would go and play for him, I think, meant more to us than they could have even meant to him, because we would play for him, do what we could to brighten his day, and he in turn would share with us stories about his family and his life before the accident. And most notably, he would talk to us about his daughter, whose name was Neve. So we chose the name because it sort of embodied, it sort of encapsulated that really profound experience of seeing and feeling firsthand how this music that we love has a really unique ability to connect us to one another on a pretty profound level.
Well, he also wrote you a very beautiful note that helped to really form your mission statement as a trio.
Well, I think, you know, you can read the full story on our website with all the details, but I think the in his note, he basically said that how much music meant to him and how, you know, he was at the end of his life and he knew that. And, you know, of course, it's a big transition that, you know, everybody eventually goes through. And he basically was talking about how music gave him a hope and sense of something out there. And I think that knowing that music can have that power and knowing that music can mean so much and can engage us in such a way and provide so much, I think that was a big turning point for all of us, I think, to realize the power that we have in some way and the privilege at the same time.
I think he also said in that note he didn't feel alone.
Yeah.
He no longer felt alone. And so to speak to what you're saying, Misha, that it, you know, it can really serve as a connector that we're all in this together.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Let's dive into chatting a little bit about your newest release. Your third recording is called Her Voice, or is it Her Voice?
Good question.
That's the first time we would ask that.
Wow. Either way, it's whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever voice, I would say, is the biggest point, I would say.
Her is also important.
It is important.
Her voice.
But we do talk a lot about the idea of, you know, the female composers or women composers and how we don't say that about men composers. We don't say, oh, male composer piece, you know. And I think the idea is hopefully sooner than later we can get away from that and just call composers composers. And we don't have to specify the gender or the race or anything else like that, you know.
Mm. Well, it's funny because I'm hearing that from more and more musicians and I'm actually receiving more and more recordings of women composers. So it's really thrilling for us because now we have more and more to share because there haven't been that many actually recorded. So thank you for that. So you're celebrating three distinguished women composers and they're from different centuries or maybe not necessarily, they overlap a little bit. So I'm curious how you selected these three composers.
Well, I think it's, you know, it was definitely a challenge because there's so many great works and composers. And the main thing was for us to provide some kind of balance and pretty distinct characters and voices. And I think these composers, they really do have that. You know, there's nobody quite like Rebecca Clark or Amy Beach or Farang for that matter. And I think having those unique voices, unique worlds of each composer, that was sort of no-brainer for us to put those together and you know, create that kind of a taster of, in a way.
Just hard to pick because there's so many amazing works.
Well, one of the things that struck me was how each of these works seems to express different sounds, like different moods. Was that intentional?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And I think it's each piece is very characteristic of each composer. I would say, I think the sort of humor and elegance in Farang, you can find it throughout her music. It's a very, very characteristic piece, I think. And Clark's sort of dramatic, contrasting atmospheres, you know, that kind of color and the way she uses instruments is very, very specific. And nobody else writes like her. And Emmy Beach, she was a big vocal composer. She wrote a lot for voice, and I think if reflected in this trio, in fact, she actually reused some of her songs in this trio, and it's such a beautiful song-like music.
Well, let's start at the beginning. Louise Ferranc's Piano Trio, Opus 33, opens this recording, and she was a very intriguing pianist and composer, and I was really intrigued by the fact that she would give concerts in, well, little musical soiree settings, but also in rooms that were owned by piano builders.
Yes, like
was she sort of was she sort of introducing people to these new instruments?
I think so. At the time, I think I'm sure it was a great honor to be invited by the piano houses to play a concert there to show off their instruments. Mm. So that means that she was really well known and well regarded at the time. That's very evident in her piano writing as well. Mm-hmm. It's very Beethovenian, Schubertian, and her finesse in writing is very incredible.
So, as you said, Beethoven was one of her influences, and I'm curious, do we hear that in this trio? And
very
if so,
much.
Where might it appear? Where could you draw our attention to hear a bit of Beethoven?
Well, I think everywhere in her writing, this E-flat major, it really reminds me of some the big writing, the virtuosic playing. It reminds me of the Emperor Concerto sometimes.
Yeah, even if how it starts, it right away has this very kind of orchestral and symphonic beginning that kind of takes you in that sort of Beethovenian symphonic world, I would say, right away. Mm-hmm. But then she also has, you know, we like, you know, researching a little bit about the piece and also her, we found out that, you know, we talked in rehearsals about, oh, that's a little bit of Schumann here and a little bit of and that. And then we found out that actually Schumann was, in fact, inspired by her music, not vice versa, which was very interesting to see because she was writing in around the same time as Schumann was. But she did write her trios before Schumann did his, I think. And so she was very, very regarded during her lifetime, which is obviously great.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect of her life is that she was, the only female professor at the Paris Conservatory for a long, long time, 30-year tenure, and during that time she fought for and eventually achieved equal pay. I mean, it's like very ahead of their times, pretty remarkable.
This trio features four movements. How is that significant?
I think that's another thing that kind of points to Beethoven a little bit, I think, and the sort of symphonic structure of it. You know, it's very traditional. There's a minuet movement, it's a slow movement, very traditional sonata form, first movement, and sort of a rondo form finale. So it's a very traditional structure in that way, which I think points back to Beethoven and sort of classical style.
The third movement is full of jokes and, like, it's very lively and fun.
There is a lot of humor, a lot of elegance, a lot of humor, wit. Yeah, and I was just going to add that I think it again sort of speaks to this feeling of a larger work. It's so awesome how she's able to achieve that in this medium.
Rebecca Clark, her trio premiered in 1921, and she was British-born, not supported by her family. In fact, her father literally threw her out of the house when she went off to study composition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I heard another story about that as well. But you know, I think that's the keys that she had to earn her living by playing viola. And I think because of the circumstance, she was one of the first female professional orchestra players. She played viola, so that was a big, big trailblazing, I'm sure, for a lot of symphony orchestras these days. You know, there's so many wonderful players of all genders, and it doesn't, you know, it's crazy to imagine that a little bit over 100 years ago, that wasn't the case at all. And I heard the story that she discovered her father's affair and confronted him, and he was not having it and kicked her out of the house. But in any case, that was her circumstance. She had to take care of herself pretty early on.
Well, and I was also reading, I believe in your notes, that she studied violin at the Royal Academy of Music until her harmony teacher proposed marriage. And I'm like, you know, this moment of, oh, my God, was this like a hashtag Me Too moment back then?
I bet it was.
and the fact that she actually was able to, I mean, she had to leave the Royal Conservatory, which is absolutely ridiculous and crazy. Mm-hmm. But the fact that she stood up to that, I think, is also very telling. She didn't sort of go with it. And you know, she had... So her own sort of core, I guess, and she was like, no, I'm not doing that stuff, you know.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of a theme throughout is these really strong women, mm-hmm. and in each case they really were trailblazers in different ways. They just had to overcome a lot, and so glad that they persevered enough to have their voices heard. On top of them being just really wonderful pieces, wonderful music, it's thrilling to be a part of, you know, doing our part to give them a bit more attention that they deserve.
In the Rebecca Clark piece, I was reading that she was a contemporary of Maurice Ravel's and that they both were using some interesting techniques in their music, like string techniques. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she definitely really gets the idiom of each instrument, and she really brings the most out of each instrument, which is, I think, is very characteristic to Ravel as well. But she, for example, the whole second movement, the strings have mutes on. So the sound is a little bit different color, and it's muted, literally, but the dynamic ranges from pianissimo to fortissimo, and, mm-hmm. you know, getting the fortissimo sound with the mute creates such a specific color, but also a sense of effort that mm-hmm. you don't get without it. So she really uses those colors and contrast and ranges that not a lot of composers of her time actually able to achieve.
Also Ponticello, right?
A little Ponticello, a little harmonics, so when you don't actually press the finger with left hand, you actually just touch the string and it creates sound. You hear the overtones versus the actual sound.
And the Ponticello is when the bow is, instead of being on the regular playing spot of the string, it's actually on the bridge.
Yeah.
So it creates this very eerie, kind of scratchy tone, very intentional.
So many pizzicatos too, right?
Oh, pizzicatos, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
She really uses instruments to the fullest, and that's really, really wonderful.
The Piano Trio Opus 50 by Amy Marcy Chaney Beach was written in 1921. It was her last major work, and she said that she was trying out a trio of old material, and that old material was coming from some of her earlier songs. Can you talk about the songs that she included?
She doesn't. I don't know how much she quotes them literally, so we don't have like a specific sources of the songs, but I think you can hear it permeates of wonderful melodies and She's treating our lines like a vocal line as well, and I think that's sort of the biggest thing is like she really treats strings and often piano as a voice, not as a just an instrument, you know. So it's really and we always try to relate to the vocal line and how would you sing something mm-hmm. Versus how you just play it on an instrument.
It's interesting because, I mean, speaking for myself, I didn't know that she was quoting individual songs until later on. But from the get-go, when we approached this piece, it was so apparent how sort of song-like or singable the melodies really were. So that makes total sense, and is evident, I think, throughout her writing.
And she did say it was so much fun herself. Like, there's a quote. She was reworking from her own materials.
I wanted to ask you about the second movement, the Lento, because she took some of the same form as the Lento in her Gaelic symphony, for which she may be best known. Can you help us understand that a little bit better?
She kind of includes two movements in one. I mean, it's a 15-minute piece in its entirety, right, in three movements. And the second movement has both the slow movement and the scherzo in the middle. The A part was very lyrical, very song-like. And then the scherzo in the middle. The juxtaposition is very special. It's unlike any other piece I really heard from any other composer.
Yeah, I was listening to it again this morning, and I was thinking the same thing. I was like, wait a minute, is that another track? Oh, no, I'm on the same movement.
Yeah, it's really unique. Yeah.
Interesting. What are you hoping listeners will take away from this music when they listen to the recording?
Well, I mean, gosh, we hope that they have at least a fraction of the enjoyment that we had in making the album. It was such a delight, as always. I think the bigger, you know, message, if there is one, is, you know, these are three fabulous artists. They happen to be women. I think it was already said, it would be wonderful if we could just refer to them as just composers instead of female composers one day, hopefully. These are, you know, three distinctive, fully formed, really authentic voices that are expressing beautiful, dramatic, varied, nuanced artistic ideas, and we owe a great debt of gratitude for having the chutzpah and being the trailblazers that they were, because they, in one way or another, they've opened the door in ways big and small for artists of all genders and races, you know, to carry on that tradition of being heard and speaking their truth, as it were.
Hopefully listeners will explore other music by these composers. There's so much wonderful, wonderful music out there.
A new recording called Her Voice, featuring the Neve Trio. I'm Julie Amacher, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler, who produced this podcast. If you're enjoying New Classical Tracks, the best thing you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app.